All right, well, thank you everyone for coming out. I think this will be the last of the semi-monthly Halakha in Modern Israel Shiurim, where we discuss different issues that have become, either have developed in modern Israel or have become a lot more relevant since the Jewish people have had independence in Israel or living in Israel, and deal with a lot of questions that had been dormant for many centuries. And one of these questions that probably wasn't very practical, at least in a Jewish army, and a whole, was not very practical for millennia. There were other times where Jews were drafted into armies or were fighting in wars, and the question was relevant. But it's a question that's relevant today, and that's about Kohanim in the army, Kohanim in the army in general, Kohanim in with regards to different facets of serving in the army. For example, in combat units, and another question when it comes to Birkas Kohanim. Can someone who has engaged in a war, has killed someone in a war, are they eligible for Birkas Kohanim? So since, you know, Naomi and Zalman signed on, and I was just saying that we're, compared to the world population, we have an overrepresentation of Kohanim or people from families of Kohanim. So just since there are a lot of experts in the laws of Kohanim here, what might be some issues with regards to a Kohen in the army? Why would a Kohen be any different than anyone else?
You may touch a dead body. You may even kill.
If you're touching a dead body. So that's one, that a Kohen is really not allowed to come in contact with the dead body, barring a relative, a close relative, and a meis mitzvah, someone who, we'll save the definition now, someone who doesn't have anyone else to bury them. Any other issues? So to start out, one issue may be, are Kohanim obligated to join an army when there's a war effort? Are Kohanim required to join the army? So for the Kohanim here, actually, for that matter, we have the Levim here as well. I said we're very, I'm a Yisrael, I'm in the minority here. So for the Kohanim as well as the Levim, so do you have to join the army? Is there a requirement for Kohanim and Levim to join an army?
Not if you're Haredi.
Well, not if you. So Nathan, that's a matter of whether you're Haredi or not. Okay, so we'll take a look. The Rambam doesn't seem to make that distinction. Debbie said God's army. So do you mean God's army as opposed to the army, or that our army is God's army? So use the word God's army. So the serving God, it's as we say, serving God is the primary role of the Kohanim, and for that matter, those in the tribe of Levi. And the Torah says, and the Rambam writes clearly, you can see in source number one, that the tribe of Levi was not given a portion in Eretz Yisrael, and was not given parts of the spoils of war. Why? The tribe of Levi was separated. Mibnei, the Rambam says, Shehuvda lavod es Hashem l'sharsel horis drachav hayisharim mishpatav atzidikim l'rabim. Because that's not the tribe of Levi, which the Kohanim are part. That's not their job. Their job is to instruct people in the just paths and the righteous judgments. Shemar yor mishpatecha liyakov esaraska liyisrael. It says about the tribe of Levi, they will teach your judgments to Yaakov and your Torah to Israel. Lefichak, therefore, huvdalu midarchei ha'olam, they're separated from the ways of the world. Lo orkin milchama, they don't arrange for war. Kishar Yisrael, like the rest of the Jewish people. Velo noflin velo zochin la'atzim v'koach gufan. And they don't receive an inheritance or acquire through their physical power. Rather,
Oh, Alex, I was cut off a couple of minutes ago, but you asked, why a Kohen maybe shouldn't be in the army. And I thought of a Mum. If they're in the army, there's a greater chance of getting wounded, and that might disqualify the Kohen from doing the Yavoda, like to Tichon.
Oh, that's an interesting too. So there's the Yavoda, there's Dukening, but then right, then there's a Mum in general that we read in this past week's Parsha, that a Kohen with a physical blemish is allowed to perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's also a topic worth addressing. One idea there is the whole service of the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to inspire a certain type of awe, which may be distracted from with certain certain physical irregularities. But that's an interesting point, that if they get wounded, then they might develop a disqualification for serving. So that's what we're told, that they are separated from the people. Nathan says that they're Haredi. It doesn't specify Haredim. That being said, there are some who view maybe an exemption as his idea from Shevet Levi. The Rambam says in the next halacha, in the end of Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel, an idea that anyone can serve God in the way of Shevet Levi. This question may not mean an absolute exemption. And now we get to Debbie's point that they serve in God's army. Ella, right, they're not involved in the regular more physical workings of the people, whether in the army or otherwise. Ella, rather, Heim Chel Hashem, they're in the army of God. Shenemar Baruch Hashem Chelo, that God has blessed his legion. And he provides for them that the tribe of Levi is, we're told, is the Rambam says clearly, just when it comes specifically to fighting in war. So it says quite clearly that the tribe of Levi and Kohanim are part of the tribe of Levi, but this would mean more than just Kohanim, are not required, and maybe their role isn't necessarily to go to war. And it's because their role within the nation is to teach, is to judge and to teach, and to serve as a spiritual example. That's one aspect. Another aspect is specifically working in the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah says in Bamidbar that their job is to, they're not, again, reckoned with the rest of the nation. Rather, Yisu has a Mishkan, they carry the Mishkan, that's Kol Kei Lav, and all of its utensils, Heim Yishar Suhu, V'saviv L'Mishkan Yachanu. And they ministered and they camp around the tabernacle, meaning their place, it seems like, is not with the rest of the people in battle. Rather, it's either in the temple or teaching and otherwise guiding the people. So if we say that Levium, and again, Kohanim are included, are not required to go to war, so now a question arises is, are they allowed to? Why yes, why no?
Well, maybe if it's a war of a mitzvah of defense, they could.
If it's a milchemes mitzvah, so actually the Rambam was describing is actually even in a milchemes mitzvah. But maybe if there's a war that's of severe consequence to the Jewish people, then say maybe that's an exception.
Maybe they could be like an inspiration to the, they wouldn't have to do physical combat, but they're like a banner.
In other words, the Kohanim would go and he would give the pep talk to the people, but because I can make it more specific. So what about fighting in the physical war? Moishe, raise your hand.
No, I think you wouldn't. It would not be beneath them, but like I said, it's kind of, the risks are too high in ruining their ability to be Kohanim.
Right, and maybe that their risk, it may distract from their primary role. I said, Moshe, you raise your hand. You're on mute.
Okay. I know of two cases of Kohanim who married Gerushot, and both were Orthodox, I think what I think was actually continued to do Birchat Kohanim, although he did not get Aliyas. The other one gave up his Kohanihood, however you want to put it. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to be learned from that. I mean, there's really nothing positive said about that by any rabbi. But that's simply the reality of what happened.
Right. That's being about someone who does something that violates their status as a Kohen. Here the question is, are they willing, are they permitted to volunteer? Meaning, maybe you could look at it two ways. You could look at it as this is saying that that's not their role and it's not their place, or it's saying maybe they don't have to. But if a Kohen wants to, or for anyone from the tribe of Levi for that matter, wants to volunteer for the army, so maybe it's a good thing.
Did I understand my good friend Moish saying that there was that a Kohen can give up his kahuna?
I mean, it's not really, it's not a legal option. Meaning, a Kohen who marries, let's say, as Moshe's example, a divorcee, so he may not tell him, but his status is still one of a Kohen. Any children that emerge are halalim. They are not Kohanim, and in fact, they're not permitted to marry Kohanim. That would be the...
I'm simply saying that they understood what would be what they would be facing.
Right. Okay. So now the question is it something like that, or is it something that they can volunteer for? It's not required, but they can volunteer. So another thing to consider is, well, one, maybe as Cheryl said, maybe it just has to do with their general station and what's ideal for them. It could also be, if your war involves an element of danger, maybe more than an element of danger, if you're not required to go to war, so are you allowed to put yourself in a situation of danger? Maybe you're only allowed to put yourself in a situation of danger because you have an obligation to go to war. So these are some questions. So there is a good amount of literature on this, because it seems to be apparent from different places that there were Kohanim in the army. One is Mishnah and Sota, which discusses all the people who had the option to go home, maybe some in their year of marriage, who built a house, but there were certain people who didn't have the option of going home. And this group of people were generally people who married people who they were not permitted to marry. There are certain types of marriages that are ineffective altogether. Like, let's say a Jew and a non-Jew, they can perform whatever marriage ceremony they want. They're not halachically married, meaning they wouldn't need a get to dissolve that marriage. There are other marriages that are prohibited. But if the marriage takes place, then they are halachically married and would need a divorce to leave that marriage. For example, a Kohen and a divorcee, someone and the mamzer, those the marriage would take effect, but it wasn't allowed to take place in the first place. So this is a list of people who engaged in marriages that were effective, but were not permitted. And it says that those people aren't given the dispensation to go home. So that includes an almana to Kohen Gadol, a widow to a Kohen Gadol. A widow is allowed to marry a regular Kohen, not a Kohen Gadol. Grusha v'chalutz to a Kohen Hedyot, and a divorcee, and someone who's had chalitza to a regular Kohen. So mamzeres and asina Yisrael, the people who are not allowed to marry Yisraelim, etc. So, what's kind of mentioned, I just want to say, what's kind of just mentioned in the list, it seems to assume that there were Kohanim in the army. It says Kohanim who were involved in these types of relationships, they weren't given the dispensation to go home. But it seems to be just taking for granted that there were Kohanim in the army who were at least potentially eligible for this dispensation. Yes, Cheryl.
I'm going a little off topic, but I always found it like unfair that a woman who drove her husband crazy and stressed him out and he dropped dead of a heart attack as a widow, and someone who got out of a horrific marriage you know, really pikuach nefesh to get out of an abusive marriage is divorced and cannot marry a kohen.
So that's not an evaluation of the worth or the quality or of the, you know, piety for that matter. The Torah specifically proscribes certain types of marriages. Maybe we can talk about it after. I promise people.
No, I know.
Mincha afterwards. So I just don't want to.
Right, but what about the Maccabees? They were all kohanim, and
they they fought in a war.
Yeah, they took the initiative. They weren't just soldiers; they were the leaders. They created the army, the rebellion against
So they, and presumably, at least what they did in the beginning was correct. So we'll see, that is cited as a precedent. But even just here, just in the course of saying who's not saying Tolem, it just assumes that if it's under discussion, that there were Kohanim who were in the army. So that just seems to be just evidence that there were Kohanim who were in the army. Now, what about the question of, if you're not obligated to go to war, if you're not obligated to put yourself in a position of danger, so are you permitted to? So that's a question that the poskim have dealt with. And Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, Tzitz Eliezer, cites the following Gemara to show that a Kohen, for that matter, other people who are not, also may not be required to risk their lives, may put themselves in mortal danger for the good of the Jewish people. The Gemara tells a story of Lyannis and Pappus, these two brothers who an official was taunting, and they said that they would be willing to be put to death. The Gemara elsewhere, the Yerushalmi, says that they refused to drink from a cup because it had a symbol of an idol on it, but basically they were not required to give their life, but they put themselves in a position where their life was taken from them. They were executed, they provoked this official, and they were executed. And so how are they allowed to do it? And just also parenthetically, this is part of the discussion about Mordechai. How is Mordechai allowed to risk his life? So there, Waldenberg says, based on this, that if a person feels, in source number 5, that his death may bring salvation to the entire group, meaning to the entire Jewish people, Pappus and Yannis both felt that in this time, whether it was religious persecution or physical persecution, that their death would benefit the rest of the Jewish people. So even though they weren't required to give up their life, meaning they weren't being compelled to actually worship idols, they still made the calculation that it would be worthwhile to give up their life, and therefore it's not considered suicide. And that is praiseworthy. So the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg says, extrapolates from there, that would mean that a Kohen, or a lady for that matter, who is not, may not be required to fight, but does join the army in an effort to help the rest of the Jewish people, so even though they're putting themselves in danger, he says that would be permitted. So it would be permitted for a Kohen or a lady to volunteer for the army and as a result, put themselves in danger, because one is allowed to, Waldenberg says, from this idea, one is allowed to put themselves in danger or risk their life if it will benefit the entire Jewish people. Now there's another question that comes up, which makes a difference whether or not Kohanim are required / allowed to serve in the army. So there's a called a mitzvah in the Torah. It's something mentioned in the Torah called the Isha Yifas Toar, the woman of a beautiful form. Now it's a difficult one to understand. It's basically that the Torah says, very surprising, that if someone is at war and they have a captive, so they're allowed to be with that captive, or they're allowed to take them into their home. And the idea there is something that's supposed to oppose the Yetzer Hara. It's the idea that when someone is in battle, that their mind and their body is functioning on a totally different level. And that's a dispensation for that situation. But you can ask the question, if maybe this dispensation in the Torah is only in that situation of someone who's in a war, who's in a war because they're required to be at war. So what about a Kohen? Is a Kohen, let's say a Kohen is in battle and he encounters a woman, encounters a captive. So is the Isha Yifas Toar, is she permitted to the Kohen? So the discussion in the Gemara and Kedushin, but the final analysis is that she is, at least initially. And the Rambam says that they're in source number 6. And just to note about this, Lo Dibra Torah Ela Keneged Hayetzer, that the Torah only permitted to counter one's inclination. But afterwards, and Cheryl, I don't want to avoid your point because it's an important one. A Kohen is also not permitted to marry a convert. So after she converts, so the Kohen would not be allowed to marry her. But that initial permission is something that also applies to a Kohen. So there's evidence that a Kohen is at least allowed to go to war. And the Birkei Yosef or Yosef Chaim David Azulai says the same thing basically on the different points that we've mentioned. That one, this idea of Isha Yifas Toar, that she that dispensation is permitted, and just the fact that the Mishnah had said that the people who are not given the dispensation to go home, a Kohen is among that. So he says that it seems clear to him that Kohanim can join up in a war effort if they want to. It seems clear that they're not required to, but if they want to, it's permitted, and it's probably even praiseworthy. Much.
Or if they're needed, I guess.
Or if they're needed, right. That's another consideration. That will also be a consideration when we discuss contact with the corpse and other things like that. Yes, Much.
I apologize if you dealt with these before I came on, but how does the concept of Kohen Mashiach Nochama deal with this?
Right, so that may be not necessarily a combat role, but a sort of inspirational role.
There's really no army without an inspiration, aside from the Ironmans.
But that would indicate that that's the Kohen's role, meaning he's right there giving chizuk, but you're not necessarily going into battle, going in the tanks.
Okay, just one other question. Is there any source in the Torah that says a Kohen cannot do this? Because Kohen isn't, you know, exempted one way or the other in Kitase.
Right, so because we see that the Kohen and Levim are exempt from the army, but that says that he can't do it, so it seems not. It seems that there's not... And there seems to be, to the contrary, evidence that Kohanim were in the army. So from just right. the perspective of volunteering, it seems that volunteering for the army would be allowed. Mm-hmm. But when you're in the army, it's more than just volunteering in the army. As we noted, the Rambam will scroll up to in the first source. So he says that the Levim are basically disconnected from all types of physical endeavors. That would probably mean any role in the army. Mm-hmm. The Kohen could join the army. But what about the combat unit? What about a situation where it would be likely that a Kohen would come into contact with a corpse?
Right. And so, do any of the commentaries suggest that if they do volunteer and they are in an army, for better or for worse, that they forfeit their kahuna?
I didn't see that, no.
Okay, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that. So there's that issue. There's just the issue about joining the army. Is it permissible? It seems to be that it's permissible to join the army, but when you're in the army and when you're in certain types of roles in the army, so with the unfortunate reality of warfare is you'll often come into contact with a corpse, even either a corpse on one of the enemies or God forbid a corpse on your side. So what is a Kohen to do with that? Will we say that war should be an exception, or do we still think that it's problematic considering that Kohanim have to refrain from coming into contact with corpses barring their close relatives?
Rabbi, I thought that if a Kohen comes in, when I say in contact, meaning but does not touch the corpse and it's not Jewish, there's no tuma involved.
Correct. So that's that's an important point, that a Jewish corpse is metame in parts tuma, even in ohel, if it's under the same roof. For a non-Jewish corpse, a kohen is only becomes tame, only gets the impurity through touching or moving the corpse. Right. So if we consider that, so then, you know, hopefully our enemies are not Jewish. Hopefully we don't have enemies at all, but hopefully our enemies aren't Jewish. So then there are, you know, less issues as well by being in their proximity. So in other words, Nathan, you're suggesting that it may be less of a concern considering you'd really only have to touch the corpse to become tummy.
Yeah, that was my point. Yes.
Right. So that's definitely a consideration, and I assume is what generally has, from what I understand, has been an allowance for Kohanim to go into the combat units. I asked an Israeli friend of mine, and some couple of people were familiar with the Israeli army, and they weren't familiar with any Kohen exemption. Hope you want to become exempt for other reasons, but it was as if to say that Kohanim do fight in the army, that when they have certain ceremonies at the military cemetery and things like that, so Kohanim won't join, but yeah, they will participate in the army. And that could be one consideration, is that especially if the corpses are not Jewish, so then there's not as much of a concern of becoming Tameh just by being in proximity. Fortunately, you may have on your side a Jewish corpse. But what might be a reason for leniency, even if there's a Jewish corpse that you have to handle? So there's a mace mitzvah. A mace mitzvah is generally assumed to be an abandoned corpse. Kohen is on the road and they see a corpse that's unattended. So a Kohen is required, even a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol is not allowed to even become tameh for his relatives. There's a mace mitzvah on the road, so we value kavod a mace, respect for the dead, and a kohen is required to be involved to ensure that it's buried. So maybe you could say that other soldiers who are in the army, soldiers who, God forbid, are killed on your side, they have the status of a mace mitzvah. Right? I mean, there could be a shortage of people who are able to take care of the body, to then ensure that the body is buried. So that might be one reason to permit a Kohen to be in a situation where they'll come into contact with dead bodies. Number two, and this is from Rav Hertz and the chief rabbis of Britain, the famous Hertz Chumash, which has been replaced in recent years by other ones. There are some holdouts. So he says that one, a soldier killed in battle is considered a mace mitzvah. Number two, as Cheryl said, the Hashmonaim were all Kohanim. They provide an historical precedent for that. And the Torah mentions people who are exempted fighting in a war, and that does not include Kohanim. So he argued, and this was relevant for World War I for Jews in the British Army, and he argued that even Kohanim could go to war. Others in that time, again, around the World War I period, argued with Rabbi Hertz, either in some of his arguments, and Rav Yitzhak Halevi Herzog, who was the rabbi in Ireland and later the Ashkenazi chief rabbi in Israel, actually argued that the government, this was in the UK, shouldn't draft Kohanim. So it seems like there are, in pre-Israel wars, there were opinions on both sides, that justifying the participation of Kohanim because, one, it's a mace mitzvah, a soldier on the battlefield, you have the precedent of the Hashmonaim, and you don't have a blanket exemption of Kohanim that's, at least Rabbi Hertz contended, that specifically mentioned the Torah. It sounds like the Rambam includes the tribe of Levi. But others, for other reasons, said perhaps they could. though we noted that if Herzog said that when, at least when it came to Britain, that the entire UK, including Ireland, that the said the argued the government shouldn't draft Kohanim. The one issue, though, if we take the Mace Mitzvah approach, is that what if there are other people who can take care of the corpse? Generally, we assume that a Mace Mitzvah is someone who doesn't have anyone else to attend to it. But if there are other people who can, not Kohanim, who could attend to the corpse, so we probably would not consider that a Mace Mitzvah. So there's some who suggested it that, like Rav Hertz did, that it maybe goes beyond just the, in war, it goes beyond the classic parameters of the Mace Mitzvah. Others have suggested that, and I don't want the Kohanim to get any ideas here, but in every situation involves a question, but there were some who suggested that maybe, and it doesn't seem to be the dominant opinion, but there were some who suggested that maybe nowadays when Kohanim, for at least partly because everyone is assumed to be Tamei Mace, everyone, even Kohanim, are assumed to have come into contact or been under the roof or whatever it may be with the dead body, and we're all assumed to be Tamei Mace. That's where the issues with entering parts of Harabayis and etc. So maybe there's less of a concern with Kohanim becoming Tamei nowadays if there are some other compelling reasons to do so. One reference of this is the Gemara Ksubas says that when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who is the redactor of the Mishnah, died, but la Kedusha, that Kedusha ceased. So what does that mean? So Tosfos, since it's number 11, quotes Chaim Kohen, who said that it refers to the Kedusha as Kahuna, the holiness or the distinction of Kohanim. And he says that had he been present when Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, one of the Bali Atosvot, died, so he would have, Chaim Kohen is presumably a Kohen, it wasn't just a name given at Ellis Island, and so he said he would have become a Tame to be involved in the burial or attend to the needs of Rabbeinu Tam. He says, based on this idea, that when the Gemara said, Shemes Rebbe bought the Kedusha, that the Kedusha was nullified, that refers to the Kedusha, the Kahuna. So the quotes of Yerushalmi in Brachos, it says that when Rebbe died, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi died, they said there's no Kahuna today, in Kahuna Hayom. So it could be that it's not absolute, but there's certain types of tumah, certain stringencies that we have. For example, tractor by going through a field that had contained dead people, but it had been plowed, there's a question about the corpses that are there. So he says it doesn't mean that altogether we don't have to worry about the Kohanim, don't have to worry about Tuma at all, but that certain stringencies and certain things that we were concerned with are now, it says after Rebbe died, being Rebbe Danasi died, that there was a diminishment of Kedusha, so maybe there's less of a concern about this. That being said, Tosfos assumes that there is, at least in some contexts, a requirement for Kohanim to refrain from being Tamei Mace, from coming close or handling a dead body.
Alex, if someone is on, a Kohen is on a boat, let's say, you know, there would be 1,000 people in steerage going from Russia to America, and people died for whatever reason, would that make him Tamei, a Kohen, just from being in the same boat or on the same boat?
It would depend on the layout or where the bodies were, but if there are, for a Jewish corpse, if a Kohen is under the same roof as other corpses, then they would become Tamei. It's why it gets tricky with hospitals and things like that.
Yeah. The Kohen in the boat wouldn't have a choice because he's...
Right. It's not one of the things, not, you know, Yaharig Val Yavar, you don't have to give your life, rather become Tamei. But that's partly why we assume that everyone, all Kohanim nowadays, are Tamei Mace. And we need the Parah Aduma because whatever situations they've been in, they've come into, even if they haven't, even not consciously, unfortunately, people have lost relatives that they're required to become Tamei for, but I assume that, as you mentioned, the boat or whatever it is, people have come into contact with the dead body. The Ravid in the 12th, 13th century says that he has an idea, and it's generally not accepted wholesale, but he says that in number 12, Kohanim Bisman Azeh, Tamei Meis Hein Va'od Ein Aleihem Chiyuv Tuma. He says, we assume all Kohanim nowadays are Tamei Meis. They've had some situation where they've been in contact with a dead body, so they're already Tamei. So he's saying, if they're already Tamei, so why do they have to prevent from being up from becoming Tamei? They're already Tamei. So he argued that Kohanim nowadays do not have to be particular about avoiding dead bodies. Supposed to be an issue. You could have questions on that. That maybe just coming, the act of coming close to a dead body could be an issue, even if it's not one of technically becoming, going from a state of tahara of purity to impurity. But the Ravid says that there is an opinion that does say this. It doesn't seem to be normative in at least accepted wholesale in the poskim. The Shulchan Aruch says that in practice, verse number 13, the Court of Jewish Law says, "Akoin mushar shelo." Number of a mace that a Kohen is cautioned not to defile himself for a corpse and other types of tumah that emanate from a corpse. And of course, as the Kohanim here know, that they try to, and it can be difficult. The whole living as a Kohen is a whole different experience, but the Kohen do try to avoid coming into the contact with any corpse or being in an area that will make them Tamei Meis, even granted, though they probably are Tamei Meis anyway. So that would be that. That would seem to suggest that Kohanim should. So with going to the army, so there may be a concern for Tumas Meis against. But some of the reasons that we mentioned have been offered for permitting Kohanim to be on the battlefield. Maybe they're considered a Meis Mitzvah. You know, the precedent from the Hashmonaim, and other things like that. It could be that also just being in a battlefield doesn't necessarily put you in a situation where a Kohen would become Tamei. So that it was noted from Herzog that some said that Kohanim should avoid combat units. From what I understand, that doesn't seem to be the practice of Torah observant Kohanim nowadays for the act to avoid going into combat units. It is, as I mentioned, when it comes to certain ceremonies and things like that, they're at cemeteries, so they won't do that. That's not considered an essential thing that a Kohen could compromise on his on avoiding tumah. Those are just some of the considerations, and you could say, how could a Kohen do it in general? So maybe it's a Meis Mitzvah, that responsibility may not be definite that they would become Tamei, so that there are some reasons that would allow it. Again, as you noted, some have discouraged that. So now there's another question of if a Kohen has killed someone. So the Gemara says that a Kohen who's killed can't duchen. I can't do the Birkas Kohanim. Mara says in source number 14, in Brachos, Amar of Yochanan, Kol Kohen Shaharag Asan Nefesh, a Kohen who's killed, Lo Yises Kapav. He shouldn't lift his hands to do the Birkas Kohanim.
Even if it was self-defense.
Well, we'll see. Because Yidekam Damim Maleu. He says your hands are full of blood. That it says a Kohen is expected to be, or the idea that someone who blesses the people for peace is supposed to be someone who is clean of blood, and therefore we have the statement, and Gerald will have to look into to what does this apply, but we do have a somewhat vague statement that a Kohen who's killed is not allowed to do the Birkas Kohanim.
But the Rabbi?
Yep.
That wasn't the case probably with Eliezer, right? With Eliezer.
You mean Pinchas?
I'm sorry, Pinchas.
Right. So Pinchas maybe is a special thing because there's a covenant of peace. whole question of, about Pinchas, but that's a good point. And that's a good model for someone who killed, but we don't associate it negatively. I mean, the Torah specifically endorses the killing. So that's going to be a question. Whether, but something to consider is the idea of a Kohen, not Duchening, is that a punishment for killing someone? Or is it that a Kohen who blesses the congregation has to have a certain history of purity or absence of violence?
Well, it's like King David wasn't allowed to build the temple.
Ah, so that's also something that's mentioned in this discussion. King David did what he was supposed to do, but in Divrei Yamim it's quoted that because he shed blood, so he can't build a house. Hashem didn't allow David HaMelech to build the base of Mikdash. So it's not a punishment. You're saying it could be that it's just the reality that a Kohen who duchens, who blesses the congregation, has to have a certain history, has to have be impeccable in his record for peace.
But is it immediate or is there like a period after which he becomes eligible again?
Oh, so that's the question. So if you say there's a period afterwards, so that may be that, okay, well, maybe if he repented. So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch says in source number 15, Kohen Sharek as a nefesh afilu b'shogeg, even someone who's killed, a Kohen who's killed someone even inadvertently, lo yisas kapav afilu aset shuva. He shouldn't raise his hands to duchen, even if he's repented.
I don't see how you can allow a Kohen to volunteer for the army and then say that he can't duchen if he kills somebody.
Right. So you're in good company. Many of the, it's clear that the majority of poskim say that. But we'll see why. The Ramah says, verse number 16, he says, he comments on the Shulchan Aruch, Yesh Omrim, they're supposed to say, Imasa tshuva, if the Kohen has done tshuva, no se kapav. Yesh lahakel abali tshuva, shalo lino delas vifnehem. And we should be lenient to those who have done tshuva so that we don't close the door before them. But this all assumes that the Kohen did something wrong, right? That's how I would read it. If a person killed someone, even if he's done tshuva. So if you say, the Shulchan Aruch says, even if he's done tshuva, that sounds like he has something to do tshuva for, right? And the Ramah says, okay, well, if he's done tshuva, then we're lenient because we don't want to discourage someone from doing tshuva. Okay, fine. But now the question remains, what about when a Kohen killed someone in war that they were required to kill? So there's no, so what need of tshuva is there? So there is an opinion of Soloveitchik, who, from what I've been able to find, seems to be at least a minority of opinion. It's the Rav Adi Yosef or Moshe Feinstein. Others disagree. But he maintained, this is quoted in Nefesh HaRav from Rav Herschel Schechter, recording some of Rav Soloveitchik's rulings and practices. And he maintained in source number 17 that a Kohen who has killed someone should not perform Birkas Kohanim. And he said, Sha'av Chayil B'Tzahal, even a soldier in the Israeli Defense Forces, Sha'arach Mechayle Ha'oyev B'Mako Mitzvah, who's killed an enemy in the context of a mitzvah, Gamkein Pasol Yisias Kapayim, that they're even disqualified from Birkas Kohanim. And he says, V'Kesher Le'inyin Zeh Ha'yarogi L'Haskir Ma'asher Melechad Dushbarach L'David. And Soloveitchik would mention that which Hashem said to King David, Dam l'rov shafachta, because you've spilled much blood, Milchamos gedolos hasis, and you've made many wars, lo sivne bayis l'shmi, you shall not build a house to my name, ki damim rabim shafachta artzelefanai, because you've shed much blood on the ground. So it wasn't that King David did anything wrong. His wars were necessary to establish the kingdom as Hashem saw fit. Nevertheless, he wasn't allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash. In I didn't type this out loud. I was typing from the book, but in the book itself, Nefesh HaRav, must have been Rav Schechter's note, he puts in that Rav Ovadia Yosef, which we'll see, he just puts a note that we'll see Rabbi Ovadia Yosef and Yechav Adas, that he disagrees. And I read an article from Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who's a student of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who's Rav Soloveitchik's son-in-law, and he said it was presumed in general Rav Lichtenstein practiced or maintained similarly to his father-in-law, but apparently Rav Lichtenstein would permit Kohanim who had killed in battle to Duchen. And again, as Paul said, that there's it's could be problematic that if you why is someone going to go to the army if you're going to say that he can't Duchen, if it's going to put a certain stigma. So I think we could say that Rav Soloveitchik wasn't saying that the Kohen did anything wrong. He says even if it's a mitzvah. But he said it was just like David HaMelech, that it was a certain reality that a Kohen who dukens has to be someone who has a history, a pristine history of peace. That being said, others seems to be the majority, but at least opinions like Rav Ovadia Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein disagree with this and maintain that a Kohen who has killed an enemy in battle can absolutely do the Birkas Kohanim. Rav Ovadia Yosef says in source number 18, that addressing this question. And he says, for several reasons, he says, one, that maybe it's just the stringency to not allow a Kohen to Duchen at all. And the idea is that Ein Kategor Nasas Anegor, that you shouldn't have you shouldn't create a situation where there's more of a spiritual accusation against the people. But maybe that's a stringency anyway. And in addition to that, he quotes from the Or Zeruah that it's only someone who's a rotzeach. This is only speaking about someone who is a murderer. Someone who's killed someone, maybe, okay, maybe even if it's inadvertent. But he says in the end, one, maybe the person has to only be a Jew. He notes that it's forbidden to kill a non-Jew, but it may be that the pasuk that's quoted in the Gemara and Brachos refers specifically to the Jews. But he says, barring all of that, or even in addition to all of that, but it seems like the main point is, in Cain, Araya Kohen Sha'omen Multat Zavaz Ha'oyev. Someone someone who fights against an enemy. So maybe they're onus. Maybe it's an onus. Maybe they're compelled to do it. Okay, if you're compelled to do it, so then maybe you're not at fault. So that would be, let's say, more relevant to someone. Let's say who's drafted into the British army fighting against the German or Russian army, something like that. Not necessarily dealing with Israel. And in some of those situations, you had Jews on the other side, depending on the periods of history. So he says, maybe if you're drafted against your will, or if you're not doing it, as an independent actor, maybe then you'd say it in any case, even if it was a Jew, you'd be allowed to duchen. But he says, at the end of the day, the kol shekein, kan shekohanim shehem chayolei tzahal, omnim legonein al Yisrael, but the soldiers in the Israeli Defense Forces who protect the guard Israel, our Tzeinu HaKadosha and our Holy Land, Shein Safek She Mitzvah Rabba Hemosin. There's without a doubt that they do a very great mitzvah. She'ezas Yisrael Miyad Sar Haba Aleihem, that they rescue Israel from an enemy that comes upon them. The cloud of the Chemetz Mitzvah, that's included in a war that's a mitzvah. And he says, Ibim Kain, Vadai She Ein Safek, that absolutely there's without a doubt that Kohanim who have killed an enemy in battle are fit to do the Birkas Kohanim. And he says, "But Davar Baro, it's very clear. Lo tells shall suffic. There's no shadow of a doubt. Shekshirim Agonim Haim Lasias Kapayim, that they're absolutely qualified to do Birkas Kohanim." And he says, "Absolutely, that they can absolutely do Birkas Kohanim." For Moshe Feinstein as well, in source number 19. Says that he also mentions this idea that, okay, you wouldn't say that they're disqualified if they're in some ways compelled to do it. And that would even be, let's say you have, again, two armies that aren't, it's not necessarily in some wars in history, it wasn't necessarily good and evil. It was one country against the other. So in such a case, and maybe you killed another Jew on the side, but you were compelled to fight. But he says also, in the, similar to Rav Avadya Yosef, that if you're talking about a case where it's a war and it's a mitzvah, so then he says, for sure, he says, Pashur Dubar, Moshe finds, he says, that of course, such a Kohen would be allowed to Duchen. But I think the difference between their understanding and Rav Soloveitchik's understanding is Rav Soloveitchik was just saying it's more of an objective thing, that a Kohen, someone who blesses the congregation, has to be someone with a pristine record of peace, just like David HaMelech wasn't able to build a base of Mikdash, not because he did anything wrong, but just because that's the kind of person, just like you need a certain kind of person to build a base of Mikdash, that's the kind of person you need to do Birkas Kohanim. But others understand it, Rav Avadya Yosef, Moshe Feinstein seem to understand it that, okay, it's a certain penalty for a Kohen who did something wrong, but if the Kohen didn't do anything wrong, so you absolutely can do Birkas Kohanim. I think that's the more normative practice. But as I mentioned in the beginning, we have in a Baruch Hashem in the Shir a disproportionate amount of Kohanim and Levim. For those of us who were not so fortunate, and we're not so fortunate, there's a story that Rav Shimon Schwab, when he was a younger man, he went to the Chavetz Chaim for Shabbos. The Chavetz Chaim asked him, I'm a Kohen. Are you a Kohen? No. So he says, why are you not a Kohen? He says, I'm not a Kohen. My father wasn't a Kohen. He says, no, the reason why you're not a Kohen is because when, by the incident of the eagle, I said, you know, Hashem Eloi, who's it, Hashem? So because my altar Zaydi came and followed the charge and yours didn't. So it shows that the Kohanim merited what they did. And the Levim also merited their exalted status because of the merit of their ancestors. And really they are, the Kohanim and Levim are really their model is the ideal to which we should strive. People who teach the nation, who serve as spiritual examples, and who represent peace. And when it comes to Kohanim being involved in war, so generally we consider war not something noble in and of itself, but unfortunate reality. And there are times where Kohanim either can volunteer, or he should volunteer to join the rest of the people, but I think the default for the Kohanim, but people who are involved in Torah, who represent peace, is something that we're all in Mamlechus Kohanim Begoy Kadosh, we're all part of that holy nation, and the Kohanim right now, at this point of history, are able to live that ideal and represent that ideal, and hopefully we should be able to receive all of their blessings, and their blessings of peace, and act in ways where we teach others and foster peace. And hopefully the questions about Kohanim and war, all questions of war, will be academic, and the Jewish people should live in peace and merit to fulfill the service of Hashem in the world.
Halavai, Yeshikoyah.